Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I'm your host, Bart Zandbergen, and I'm so excited today, Paul.
I can see why. We've been chatting about this. This is really a one-of-a-kind company I've never heard of before.
Yeah. So, as you know, Paul, and most of our listeners, is that while this is primarily a financial show, we really like to take some time and profile different luxury brands. And we've never had a watch company at all. And for us to come out of the gate with a watch company like Vacheron Constantin, I think we're coming out with pretty strong.
Yeah, right.
So I'd love to welcome my guest, Christian Salmoni. So welcome to the show, Christian.
Thank you. Thank you very much for hosting me.
Oh, of course. I know you have been very busy in your visit here to the States, and you have a lot to do and a lot to say. But I'd love if you could share with the listeners a little bit more just about you. And we were talking a bit offline about where you were born and the family you were born. And so can we hear a little bit more about that?
Okay. So, well, as you are mentioning, so we are talking about Vacheron Constantin, who is the oldest watchmaking brand existing with a non-stop activity since 1755. So that makes, if I count well, 264 years of activity. And as probably many of you know, so watchmaking is a specialty of Switzerland, and I am not an exception since I was born in a family of watchmakers. I was born in the little valley in the French-speaking part of Switzerland, where more or less everyone is working in the field of watchmaking or has a parent, a friend, someone working in this activity. So,
yeah.
So this is where I born. So my grandfather was a very good watchmaker, and you know, I think he gave me this interest, which became later a passion for watches. While I was a kid, when I was like probably seven, I used to visit my grandfather, who had his own workshop in the same house as my parents, and he was taking a lot of time to show me what he was doing. He was explaining to me what kind of work he was doing, and I was very impressed by, you know, these tiny components that he was assembling by hand. And so he has been really my main inspiration for what became my job. So in other words, I was born in the field of watchmaking, and there is some watchmaking in my blood. So this is where I come from.
So when you say watchmaking, I started to visualize, like, people could be a watchmaker as a trade or a shoemaker or something. They made watches like your grandfather in their shop under a brand name, or they just made watch to make watches?
So to make a long story short, so I would say that a long time ago, so maybe I should start with the valley I come from. So the valley I come from is a small valley in the Swiss Alps. And historically, watchmakers were farmers. And in this valley, the winter is very long. It used to be very long. So it used to be like 5 months of winter. And so during winter time, these farmers, they had not a lot to do, obviously.
No TV in the 1700s.
No
huh?
TV, no internet. And in the 19th century, typically, they during winter time, they were busy with watchmaking. So that was an accessory activity. And so it became a specialty of this area. And most of these watchmakers, they were working in their farms. So that was the tradition. So my grandfather was a specialist watchmaker doing some very special type of watchmaking, which is a open worked movement. So movement you see through. So we call them also skeleton movements. So it's a specialty. I don't think we have time to go to the specialty, but this is a great specialty.
Yeah.
And like many other watchmakers in this valley, he had his own workshop at home, and he was working for several companies in this area. That is a typical example of how it was in the 60s.
Yeah.
So this day, obviously, it has changed.
Yeah.
But it's still the same valet.
Yeah.
But the winter are less than 5 months now.
Less than five months. And there's a little bit more to do. The watches today, and you have a beautiful watch that I hope
Thank
that
you.
You'll be able to show people here in a moment. And I know it's quite historic. Is there much difference in the mechanics of a watch today than it was, other than the digital watches and, the, and those, but the more classic watches?
Yes, I think it's a pretty good question, because I think that if we come back to mechanical watches, their primary function or reason to be was to tell you the time, because we had no other possibility except clocks or churches to know the time that it is. In the 70s, something happened, which is the invention of the quartz movement.
Yeah.
So the electronic movement, which has changed everything. Because since the middle of the 70s, you could really read the time anywhere. I mean, on your fridge, to say something terrible. And anywhere like that. So mechanical watches became obsolete in a way. And they were rediscovered some 15 years later, at the end of the 80s, when, let's say, a group of watch lovers, watch collectors, started to buy, to collect mechanical watches. The main change has been that it has been a major shift, since watches were not anymore, their primary function was maybe not anymore to give you the time, but they were considered like beautiful objects, pieces of art, examples of craftsmanship. And by the way, that also tells you time. So we don't have to forget that.
That's
so
right.
It has created this this great interest for modern mechanical watchmaking. And Vacheron Constantin has always been one of the brands at the very top of fine watchmaking. So that's a story in a nutshell.
Yeah. I have a little bit more of an expertise in wine, and some of the boutique wine makers do very small quantities, and that makes them even more sought after.
Yep.
Is that similar with
your
brand?
I would say so. Yes, absolutely. So for us, our production is very low. It's a very good example. I think the boutique wineries, so it's similar. So it's very high end, and we produce we in comparison with some other names, we produce a very small number of watches. The reason is that we still have a lot of operations which are manual driven, the sense that hand finishing, for example, is still something that we do. So we are very much concerned about maintaining the traditions and maintaining the craftsmanship. So that is something which is, and the know-how, the traditional know-how of fine watchmaking.
Yeah.
So that's something which is for us highly important.
And I don't know if you can answer this question, but what does small production watches mean? Is it hundreds a year? Is it thousands? Is it hundreds of thousands? What's the...
Well, there's some thousands, some thousands in a year. So I would say that the global production of watches worldwide yearly is something like 1.2 billion. So we are really a tiny fraction of that.
Yeah.
So we are talking really about prestige, if I may say, watchmaking or luxury watches, which means beautiful objects, precious materials, a lot of care into the design, the making, requiring a lot of skills when it's about technicality, since many of our watches are very complicated. And we are continuing this tradition of complicated technical watchmaking.
I know you have quite a history with the company, starting, I think, many, many years ago at a different level. Can you share with your path at the company?
Yeah, very, very much. So I joined the company in 1990, so that makes already 29 years.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of time. I joined the company. I was working in Geneva, Switzerland, in the field of finance. And at the end of the 80s in Geneva, in Switzerland, you could change, absolutely leave your job the evening and find a new one the day after. Things have changed a little bit, I think. So it's a bit different right now. And so I was someone that a friend of mine just asked me, would you be interested into working in at Vacheron Constantin? So this is a watchmaking company which is restarting, as mechanical watchmaking is restarting. And so for me that was interesting, because for obvious reasons, for family reasons, I had this connection with my watchmaking since I was a kid. And I said to myself, you just give a try.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, if you don't like that, then you just should say goodbye and do something different.
Yeah.
So I'm still here. It's 29 years after. And I still have a lot of pleasure. And I don't remember any morning when I woke up and say, oh gosh, I have to go to work. So this, you know, it's,
I would say that's really
I don't consider that like a job. It is a job, obviously. Yeah. But I mean, for me, it's a pleasure, and it's something which is very much a very important part of my life.
Yeah.
But I enjoy it very much.
Well, that's a great career when you can say that. I know you have some current models that you're real excited about, but before we even get there, what do you think differentiates you from some of the other bigger, or not bigger, some other prestigious brands like you right now?
I think that, first of all, so we have this seniority, so, you know, this 260 years of existence. We have accumulated a great know-how. I think that we have a quite unique combination of, I would say, a very elegant classic design, a sophisticated. So we also master every aspect of fine watchmaking, from simple to very complicated. And on top of that, I think that the level of finishing, well, handmade finishing, is absolutely fantastic. And for people who really are interested into watchmaking, finishing is something which is highly important. Sorry, I don't have a precise comparison to do, but it's like, you know, finishing the body of a classic car by hand. It's a bit similar.
Yeah.
So I think that we are different because we are this combination of these three elements. And in addition, the fact that we always have made the highest level of watchmaking. So we are really, really on the top of this activity. Mm-hmm. And we also always have followed a narrow path, which is a classic design. And we are not changing our design. We are not changing the, you know, we are not following a trend that would be, for example, big black watches. So we're not going to do big black watches. We will continue to do elegant dress watches.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So in fact, we are really one of the benchmarks of classic watchmaking. And this is what makes us unique, I think.
Oh, those are great points. How long does it take on average to build one watch?
It really depends on the complexity of the timepiece. So let's take, for example, a grand complication like a striking watch. A watch with on demand will strike the hours, quarters, and minutes. So it can require until 6 months for a specialist watchmaker to assemble one single timepiece. To give you an example of that complexity, an additional example, to be able to work on such complicated watches, you need 20 years of experience in a workshop.
Wow.
So it's a kind of, you know, you never stop to learn when you are a watchmaker.
Yeah.
So there is no real limit to this. The best example that I could tell you is that we made the most complicated watch ever made in history in 2015. So that's a timepiece which has 57 complications, and it required 8 years of work for three watchmakers. So
for one watch.
For one watch, yeah. So meaning that these three guys had to work together during 8 years on one single timepiece. That gives you an example of how far fine watchmaking can go. I think it's quite a nice example.
I'm fascinated listening to this, and I guess I have to ask, maybe this is a crude question, but what kind of prices
here
are we talking about? Yeah.
Well, I don't know if we can still talk about price in that case. I mean...
that's fine.
Yeah, I think this is...
I guess what I'm shocked at is the price of fine watches and the collectible watches. We had somebody in here about a year ago who runs a shop here somewhere in, I think, Orange County, and he deals, it's an online site, he deals just with collectible watches. For example, he brought in Steve McQueen's iconic watch that he wore in one of these racing movies.
Yes.
I guess it's a Boulevard or something or whatever. And it, you know, once it went for, I don't know, let's say a couple $100s or something, and now this watch was valued at like $250,000 or something here. And he just pulled it out of his pocket. It was like, you know, I've got this Steve McQueen's watch and everything.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
This
like collectible art. It's like collectible wine. It's like collectible cars.
Absolutely.
They're hitting stratospheric numbers with some of these.
The big difference between like, for example, if we consider like collectible objects, let's talk about the Ferrari GTO from the 60s. So I think now the price of such a car is something like $40 million.
Yeah, that's about right.
And the difference with the watch is that You just can put a watch in your pocket, so you can't with the Ferrari. So that's the main difference. But I mean, the amount of work sometimes is comparable. So I think the paradox with watches is that they are really tiny objects that you put on your wrist, but the work, the know-how, the complexity, which is inside, is something amazing too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the watch you have on right now.
Yeah, with pleasure. My job is a style director and heritage director. One of the cool things with my job as heritage director is that I can, wear a watch from Vacheron Constantin, a private collection. Yeah. And so that is a very nice watch. It's a triple calendar, so it's a calendar watch which indicates the day, the date, and the month. And this is a steel watch from 1945 with a very beautiful design. And we did less than 100 examples of this model in between 1942 and the early 60s. Wow. So it's a rare model in steel.
Yeah.
And I love very much that watch because, I like the design. I like the movement, its complexity. But the thing that I really love is that this watch performs flawlessly. And it was manufactured in 1945. You don't have, with mechanical watches, we are not facing obsolescence.
Yeah.
Like with some other devices.
Yeah.
So that's what is nice with watches.
Yeah.
What is the classic period to collect? Are they collecting watches from the 1800s? Are they collecting watches from the 1940s and 50s? It seems to be most of the collectible watches we've seen, like the Steve McQueen watch, seem to be that kind of 50s, 60s kind of thing there.
Mm-hmm. So I think, with collectors, it really depends what they like. Some of them, they are collecting only sports watches. Some of them are only collecting watches from one brand. And some would collect watches that they love, basically. So, but it's true that there are some decades in the 20th century when we talk about wristwatches and not about pocket watches, which are especially interesting for collectors, I would say. Let's say the 40s after the Second World War, or let's say the 40s in general. And the 50s is definitely a decade in which a lot of beautiful and iconic designs were created. So it's not so different from other objects. So if you remember in the 50s, it has been a cornerstone decade for industrial designs. Think about the cars from the 50s. I think today we are still very much influenced by the design of the 50s,
yeah.
Not only on the watches, but cars and other metals. So I would say that for collectors, to answer properly to your questions, it's true that many collectors are turning their heads to watches from the 50s. But
And last question, then I'll shut
sure.
up here. What about old pocket watches? And when did they go? When my great-grandfather, I have my great-grandfather's pocket watch.
Yes.
I don't know if it's worth anything, but it was his watch, and he wore it forever. Every gentleman wore a pocket watch, put it in that little pocket there on a chain. When did we go from pocket watches to wristwatches?
In fact, we let's say that wristwatches started to emerge in the very first years or the very last years of the 19th century, and it was really the consequence of the miniaturization. But pocket watches remained popular until the beginning of the 30s. It's only during the 30s that wristwatches became more important than pocket watches.
Oh.
And funny enough, at the beginning, wristwatches were mostly, they were, what women were more wearing wristwatches than men, because they were, it was considered as a decoration.
Jewelry.
It was more fashionable,
yeah.
It was kind of a jewelry.
Yeah.
And serious collectors or men, they were just, I would say, considering wristwatches like, fragile, in other words, a little bit cheap and not lasting long because they were not protected from dust and water. So wristwatches for men became popular at the beginning of the 30s, probably. And then after it, the miniaturization could make possible the integration of complications. So it's always with watchmaking a story about complications.
Yeah.
And when the miniaturization could create the possibility to have complicated watches on your wrist, then men really adopted the wristwatches.
Yeah.
But it's there are still collectors, and we still acquire at auction, for example, some important models which are pocket watches, because they are important watches from the historical angle.
Well, I do have a historical watch. I was going to wear it in today and honor this. It's a very well-known French brand, Timex, and it has a little picture of Mickey Mouse on it. I don't know if that's
okay. Right. I think, you know, with watches, the most important is that really, if you love them, then it's a good thing.
Yeah,
that's the most important.
And Paul, you went in way too fast, because we were talking about models of the 50s, and I was going to really like set you up for being a model of the 50s.
Well, it's interesting, because I did. It's actually my grandfather's watch, and it was a precious memento to him, and it's been passed down. And that was, every fine gentleman had a pocket watch. You pulled it out and you flipped it open. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere along the line, I guess I didn't realize it was like the 30s and probably into the 40s that men stopped pulling it out, the watch on a chain, and started wearing it on their wrist.
I actually had not, until we just had this conversation just now, realized that the lifespan of a wristwatch is really not that long. Really. It's been about 150 years-ish, if we talk about in the 1930s.
You mean
the beginning of, not 150 years, what am I doing? About 100 years.
I'm watchmaking.
So not watchmaking, but the wristwatch.
Wristwatch is a relatively new phenomenon. Yeah.
So the wristwatches, I would say they came out
less than 100 years.
In the first years of the 20th century.
Yeah.
There are some examples of the end of the 19th century, like 18, for example, our very first wristwatch was from 1889. It became popular at the beginning of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Last question. When did these massive men's watches gain popularity? When I was a kid, I never saw it there. Hold up your watch there, Bart. Yeah. These big watches are the big deal here for people, at least in Southern California.
Yeah, sure. So I think that, you know, this has to see with fashion. I think that we have rediscovered some professional watches, like diving watches, which were quite large, and they became the collectors started to collect them, and they became more and more popular. And little by little, the size of the watches has became larger. So, to give you an example, so in the 90s, usually, men's watches, they were maybe between 34, or even less than that, 32 maybe, 32 until 37 millimeter diameter for a round watch. And since the 2000s, we have been moving from 37 until easily 47, something
47,
like that.
47, 48 on some.
It has been a very important trend, but... also because suddenly the watches became much more readable, because simply you had a larger surface on your wrist.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to know that these days there is a trend to come back to smaller design.
Yeah.
So I think it has to go with fashion and trends. You know,
it
goes in one direction, and after a while, it comes back in another direction.
But there's something about the watch like you have on now, just the class. That's a classic forever.
Well, I think so. You know, typically to carry on with what you were mentioning, the watch that I had previously on my wrist was a 42 millimeter diameter.
Oh, okay.
And this one is a 35 millimeter. So I needed a couple of hours to really, getting used to this dimension. But once you get it, you don't need to come back to larger designs.
Yeah.
So
where do you sell these watches? Are these all? You talked before. I don't think you mentioned too. You do some bespoke watches. Some
one-offs.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So
I don't even know where I'd go get such a thing.
So,
even if I had the money, which I don't, but I don't know where I'd go find such a thing.
I think we have to come back to the notion of collectors. As you know, collectors are people who are very passionate, and they are looking for the exceptional, and they want sometimes also something that no one else can mm-hmm. have. And this is how
you're talking about Bart and all his friends and all his clients. Yes, you're at
the right place.
You're at the right place.
Yeah. And so we noticed that interest from some client into creating the watches of their dreams, and we started this service of bespoke watches. We are really dedicated to create unique pieces. So it's not a customization of something which is existing. It's really a new development that can be made together with the client. And it can be, most of the time, we are talking about complicated watches with a lot of complications.
What's the time frame? Is it a year or two? And how would I design a watch? Do I tell you things I like, or do I tell you my lifestyle, or do you just match my look? Or I have no idea how you'd custom a watch for me.
It would be a discussion. We would love to know what kind of watchmaking you like. What kind of feature would you like to have? What kind of complication?
Your lifestyle, your clothes.
After the style, something that we will make some proposal and refine it with you. So it's really, you know, it's a kind of co-creation, and we are with the client all along the process of designing. So this is a very successful service, and we have created a lot of different designs. Some of them can be, you know, like ultra thin watches, very discreet, and some others can be very flamboyant as well.
Yeah.
So there is no, you know, every watch is different one from the other.
So don't worry, Paul, we can make a flamboyant watch for you.
That's what I'm looking for.
We're almost out of time, but what are a couple of your favorite watches that you're bringing out on display these days?
So, well, we have obviously a selection of these bespoke timepieces. Most of them are examples of complications, but we have one particular watch I'm thinking about. So this is a unique timepiece. This is a watch which has a dial made of enamel, which is an ancient decoration technique, and it represents the New York from the sky. The idea was really to represent the Manhattan when you arrive in Manhattan by night by plane.
Uh-huh.
And it has been a fantastic development between our artisans and one independent artist we are working with. And she applies by hand little sparkle of diamonds and dots of powder of gold and platinum on the watch face. And she needs to apply for every timepiece up to 30,000 of these dots hand by hand. So this is a good example of what is the finest watchmaking, I think.
Wow, that is amazing. That is amazing. Well, before we close up, how, and kind of to play off of Paul's question, how can people see your product, reach it, buy it?
So we have, we are present in the United States since several years, so since the year 1832. So
How did I miss you up to now?
Yes. So we have a boutique in we have two boutiques in Los Angeles, and yeah. we have a point of sales in the United States. So if you go to
vacheconsultant.com,
okay,
you will find us.
Okay, and then how
do we spell that? We're gonna have to spell that for all of us.
It's V A C H E R O N, then Konstantin is Konstantin.com.
Very, very good. Well, we so appreciate you taking the time. I know you're on a busy roadshow and
no pun out of town. No pun intended, taking the time.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I want to thank everyone who has tuned in, and we look forward to being in studio next week. Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest, Inc., and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest, Inc. under SEC registration.